This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, December 30th. From Washington, D.C., I'm Karen Miller, sitting in for Ada Begado. In today's newscast, the Israeli military continues its attack on Gaza.
We have no refuge shelters. We have no shelters underground. So where do the people go? To the sea? To the west of Gaza, there is the sea. And to the east of Gaza, there is the Israeli borders.
Pakistan bombs the tribal areas, killing civilians in their attempts to weaken Taliban control. And we'll explore some of this year's most neglected news stories.
You know, democracy is about the conversation of citizens. That's what it is. And if we're not conversing because we don't have core information that we need to connect our values and our interests with the largest public issues of the day, then to that degree, democracy is unreal. It's diminished. It's can't succeed.
All this and more, but first, these news headlines.
I'm Nell Abram with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Even as a committee of the Illinois House of Representatives met today to consider impeaching Governor Rod Blagojevich, he called a press conference and named a replacement to the U.S. Senate seat vacated by President-elect Barack Obama.
If I don't make this appointment, then the people of Illinois will be deprived of their appropriate voice and vote in the United States Senate. So I'm here today to announce that I am appointing Roland Burris as the next United States Senator from Illinois.
However, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid issued a statement today saying the Democratic caucus will not seat anyone named by the embattled Blagojevich and called the move unfair both to Mr. Burris and to the people of Illinois. The Illinois governor was arrested on December 9th on federal corruption charges regarding allegations that include attempting to auction off the U.S. Senate seat. When Roland Burris was elected as Illinois comptroller, a post he held from 1983 to 1991, he became the first African American to win statewide office in Illinois. Burris became Illinois' attorney general in 1991 and served until 1995. He has unsuccessfully run for governor and for the U.S. Senate. In Bangladesh, election results announced today confirm that the secular Awami League won by a landslide in yesterday's poll. PC Dubey reports.
Hasina is a former premier and the daughter of Sheikh Mujibur Rahman. Rahman led Bangladesh in its liberation struggle against Pakistan in 1971 and was assassinated in a 1975 military coup. The army grabbed power 2 years ago after much electoral wrangling in the country. Monday's election formally ends the army rule and ushers in democracy. Hasina's party won 259 out of 299 seats in the country's parliament, while her rival party, led by another woman, former Premier Khalida Jia, took just 29. Political observers say the election has been largely absent of rigging because the UN monitored the election and succeeded in eliminating nearly 13 million fake voters during the past few months. Meanwhile, India has hailed the fair, peaceful, and free conduct of the election, describing it as a major landmark in South Asia's democratic politics. From Siliguri in India, close to Indo-Bangladesh border, I am PC Dubey.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Arkansas has filed a lawsuit to attempt to block the Thursday implementation of a law that prevents unmarried couples from either fostering or adopting children. Last November, the law was supported by more than 56% of the Arkansas electorate, and proponents say it is intended to prevent gay and lesbian couples from becoming foster or adoptive parents. Arkansas was in the process of allowing unmarried cohabitating couples to foster and adopt when the law was passed in last month's general election. Department of Human Services officials have said they do not expect to uproot any children from their homes. A coalition of business interests trying to defeat the labor law reform that unions are pushing launched state ballot initiative drives today. Doug Cunningham is with Workers Independent News.
A business-backed coalition called Save Our Secret Ballot is launching state constitutional amendment efforts in at least five states today that would require secret ballot elections in union organizing drives. Business wants to keep its right to force elections in union organizing campaigns because they can pressure and intimidate workers with strong anti-union campaigns when those elections are used. These proposed constitutional amendments are designed to thwart efforts by workers and their unions who want to pass the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform. That measure would allow workers to form unions when a majority of workers at a business sign union cards certified by the U.S. Labor Department. Backed by President-elect Barack Obama and a majority in Congress, it would take employer intimidation out of union organizing. The Employee Free Choice Act gives workers the power to choose secret ballot elections, but it strips away employers' power to force those elections. The AFL-CIO says Save Our Secret Ballot is a shadow front group opposed to workers having a real free choice in union organizing. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Department of Homeland Security has filed a lawsuit asking the court to condemn a swath of South Texas land owned by the Nature Conservancy so it can build a border fence. The strip of land in question bisects the Conservancy's Lenox Foundation's Southmost Preserve. And an Air New Zealand Boeing 747, partially fueled by veggie oil, completed a two-hour test flight today. One of the plane's engines used a 50-50 blend of Jatropha plant oil and A1 jet fuel. Such second-generation biofuels use a broad array of plants, have lower emissions, and are less expensive than traditional biofuels like ethanol. For Free Speech Radio News from WMNF Community Radio in Tampa, I'm Nell Abram.
Israel's airstrikes on Gaza continues into day four. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says officials are considering a 48-hour ceasefire, but that the airstrikes are the first stage of an attack approved by the Israeli Security Cabinet. The Israeli attack has killed an estimated 368 people, including dozens of children, according to Gaza's health officials. Another 1,700 are wounded, some seriously. Palestinian militants killed two Israelis. FSRN Rami Amagari lives in Gaza. Israeli planes struck his hometown today. He spoke to us about the situation on the ground.
Just today, they bombarded so many buildings in the Gaza Strip. They bombarded ministry buildings. They bombarded the municipal buildings. They also attacked houses populated with many people. Let me just mention one important fact, that the houses in the Gaza Strip, the nature of the houses, are densely populated. They are just close to each other, very close. The mosque is close to the house, and the house is close to the mosque. So when Israeli airstrikes targets, for example, a mosque of the Hamas people here in Gaza, this mosque is definitely and inevitably harming the civilians around the mosque. For the time being, and for so far, Israeli airplanes have targeted and have hit seven mosques in different parts of the Gaza Strip. Today, in the Jabali refugee camp in northern Gaza, they targeted a house near a mosque in this area. Today also, and the refugee camp of Al Buraj in central Gaza Strip, they targeted the house. They targeted also a mosque. About seven mosques have been targeted. Besides this, as I told you, the houses are being a potential target for the Israeli warplanes because of the nature of the houses here in the Gaza Strip, which are very, very close to each other. They are densely populated. As I told you, Gaza is a very small coastal strip. That's really the situation on the ground. Also, the medical staff here have been targeted. Yesterday, for a news report for Afasaran, I have quoted a spokesman for the health ministry, who is the chief of the emergency. He just told me personally that about five ambulances have been hit, and the three firefighters also have been hit throughout their work and their aid for the people, for the injured or for the casualties. This is really a very alarming situation, actually, and a horrible situation for the population. One important thing about the situation, that the Israeli warplanes are buzzing and hitting, scores of air raids have taken place so far, and the nature of the infrastructure of the Gaza Strip do not tolerate such airstrikes, because there are no refuge, no shelters for the population, for the refugee population here, no shelters, unlike the Israeli citizen towns, which are furnished, which are really enriched with such refuge shelters. shelters that protect people from the airstrikes or from the shelling.
Rami told us movement on the ground is very restricted. Many Palestinians do not have power, nor can they seek food or medical aid out of fear of airstrikes.
We have no refuge shelters. We have no shelters underground. So where do the people go? To the sea? To the west of Gaza, there is the sea. And to the east of Gaza, there is the Israeli borders. And where to go? Just to be in the sea, to swim? I don't know. Really, I don't know.
An estimated 1.5 million Palestinians live in the small coastal Gaza Strip, most of them civilians. Today, the U.S. State Department said it holds Hamas fully responsible for breaking the ceasefire and for the renewal of violence. It also pledged some $25 million to a United Nations relief agency to help Palestinian refugees in Gaza and the West Bank. The U.S. gives billions of aid to Israel. Meanwhile, a ship carrying humanitarian aid to Gaza was hit by the Israeli Navy. The ship called Dignity was in international waters when passengers say it was attacked. Witnesses say several Israeli warships surrounded the boat and fired ammunition into it, then rammed it three times. There were 16 passengers on the boat, including physicians from Britain, Germany, and Cyprus, along with human rights activists, including former U.S. Representative Cynthia McKinney. The ship was on its way to assess the impact of Israel's military strikes on the civilian population. After being hit by the Israeli Navy, the boat made its way to Tai, Lebanon. Around the world, communities are calling for an end to the Israeli attacks against occupied Gaza. FSRN's Marie Trigona reports from Action in Buenos Aires.
Outside the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires, Arab and Argentine solidarity groups rallied, calling for Israel to halt the fiercest attacks on Gaza in decades. At least 400 marched at the embassy in Argentina in defense of the Palestinian community. The Israeli embassy was under tight surveillance, with police barricades and dozens of police officers surrounding the building. Tilde Robia, president of the Federation of Argentine Palestinian Entities, attended Monday's events. Robia was born in Argentina, but still has family in Palestine.
Our objective is to try and show the world the slow and steady, systematic genocide that the Palestinian people are being subjected to. The idea of the vigil is to display a constant presence until the bombing and massacre in Gaza ends. Of course, I feel a lot of pain. I'm thinking about my family, thinking about my cousins, my brothers and sisters who I don't know but who are suffering through this terror. And I think about the bloodshed, so much bloodshed. That is the deepest pain.
Y pienso tanta sangre derramada, ¿no? Tanta sangre derramada. Eso es lo que es el dolor más profundo.
The march extended into an all-night vigil where protesters held signs that read, "End the apartheid." As nightfall approached, protesters lit 300 candles for the victims of Israel's latest airstrikes. Each candle was placed in a paper bag filled with sand. Each bag carried the message, "Todos somos palestinos," we are all Palestinians. Patricia Morales is from the non-governmental organization Argentines in Solidarity with the Palestinian People. Wearing a mask with the shape and colors of the Palestine flag, she said that people in Gaza have expressed dire need for solidarity and humanitarian aid.
When other Palestinian NGOs found out about our association, we got a lot of responses. We were surprised that they already knew that we had begun to work as an NGO. Many groups sent us the names of their organizations to see if they could collaborate. This evidently shows that it's a people who need help not only with protests, but concrete solidarity, material aid.
Solidaridad concreta, real, material, ¿no?
The vigil concluded with film screenings of videos documenting the plight of Palestinians. On Monday, Mercosur member countries expressed concerns and repudiation of Israel's air attacks in Gaza. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Marie Trigona in Buenos Aires.
Across the U.S., crowds are gathering to protest the Israeli bombing of the Hamas-run Gaza Strip. Demonstrations began last night in some cities and continue today in a national day of action. FSRN will bring you voices from two of these demonstrations in opposite sides of the country. First, we go to Melinda Tuhus in Washington, D.C.
The rally began outside President-elect Barack Obama's transition office. Then protesters marched for a few blocks on the sidewalk at rush hour, waving Palestinian and U.S. flags. They chanted condemnation of U.S. funding for the Israeli military, which enabled Israel to buy the warplanes and the missiles that were raining down on the 1.5 million Gazans who live in the most densely populated area in the world.
Not another nickel! Not another dime! No more money!
Mo Hawa, a young Palestinian-American, criticized the U.S. government for not taking any action to stop the killing, which so far has claimed more than 375 Palestinians and 4 Israelis.
It's unstoppable until somebody like George Bush or Barack Obama says something about it, because they, you know, like Israel is the spoiled child for the United States, and that's the only way they can stop it.
Hamas denies Israel's right to exist and has fired Qassam rockets into southern Israel, which provided Israel's rationale for its drive to wipe out Hamas. Hawa said that despite Obama's often stated full support for Israel, he hopes the new president will take some action to stop the violence. For FSRN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in Washington, D.C.
This is Africa Jones in San Francisco's business district. Around 500 protesters blocked rush hour traffic in front of Senator Dianne Feinstein's office. Feinstein has been a staunch supporter of Israel's policies.
We're here at Feinstein's office to tell her we refuse to support her if she's going to continue to support the Israeli government with unconditional support for their crimes.
Nora Hori is the Middle East coordinator with the Americans Friends Service Committee, a nonprofit committed to peace and social justice.
We're sick of paying our tax dollars to ongoing military occupation and war, sending over ammunitions that are being used directly to target innocent civilians. The Israel government denies it, but it continues to happen repeatedly without any response from the U.S. government or condemnation. So if they're not going to respond, then the people are.
Israeli government officials have said that the attacks on Gaza were necessary to defend the nation against Hamas rocket attacks. But Mo Shurer, a volunteer with Jewish Voice for Peace, says that Israel should lift the blockade against Gaza if it really wants peace.
I don't think anyone is denying that Israel has a right to defend itself. It's the proportionality that's at issue. If Israel really wanted to end the violence, they could open up the entry points to Gaza and stop the siege of Gaza. And when people are desperate, they do desperate things. I'm not condoning it. I think bombing anybody is ridiculous. But you can't expect an occupied people to behave nicely.
Last year, the U.S. signed a deal to give $30 billion in foreign aid to Israel over 10 years. But critics say the U.S. needs to do more to support peace in the region. Mo Shurer hopes President-elect Barack Obama will make that happen.
The U.S. has made this all possible with uncritical support of Israel and a disengagement from the peace process. And the hope is that Obama, who understands, as a community organizer, he was involved with Palestinians. The hope is that he'll at least bring an even-handedness to this process.
Nora Hori says that some groups will lobby Barack Obama in February to try to influence the incoming president on Israeli-Palestinian relations.
We're not going to rest on our laurels and hope that just because he's a person of color that he's, you know, knows what it's like to struggle, and clearly he's being influenced by powerful interests, and we just want to make sure that we're in his ear and make sure that he knows the truth.
President-elect Obama has not spoken on the recent violence in Gaza, but has said in the past that he supports the right of Israel to defend itself against attacks. Activists have planned a national day of action against the attacks on Gaza in over a dozen cities today, most protests taking place in the evening. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Africa Jones.
Podcasts and transcripts of Free Speech Radio News can be found online at www.fsrn.org. There, listeners can also comment on the day's stories and participate in discussion forums. That's on fsrn.org. This is Free Speech Radio News. Free Speech Radio News is online at www.fsrn.org. The Pakistan Army began airstrikes in Jamrud and Khyber Agency, targeting the main Pakistan-Afghan highway where truck convoys carry supplies to NATO forces in Afghanistan. Militants have been looting many NATO supply trucks in this area, but civilians live in this area too. It's the second time Pakistan gunship helicopters have attacked, killing and injuring civilians. Many villages are under attack in this new military operation. FSRN's Afridi Afridi reports from the scene.
It is 11 a.m. and Pakistan Army helicopters fly overhead, striking hard a village called Ahmad Khan Kali. The village is just 15 miles away from Peshawar, the capital of Northwest Frontier Province. It is surrounded by a graveyard in one of the famous private schools named Ghazali Public School. This village is considered a Taliban hideout, but is now turned to ashes and pieces of mud blocks after 20 minutes of heavier strikes. Husbands, fathers, and brothers took most women and children to a safe place during the airstrikes. While the official death toll is 4, FSRN saw at least 14 dead, including 8 members of one family. Amir Khan, a law graduate from Peshawar University, is living in an adjacent village. He spoke to FSRN from his home by cell phone. He says he's worried and afraid.
I do not believe there is a single member of the Taliban in that village, since we all hate the Taliban more than anything else. How could we provide shelter to them? When I leave this room, I see only destruction and worry for my family. Is this justice? Killing innocent people in the name of the Taliban? At the very least, we should be informed before this heavy attack. We need to get the women and children to safety.
The heavy sounds of bombs and bullets can be heard at Kachagadi camp, some 10 miles away from Jamrud. There are tents all around, and these people have left the nearby Bajawad and Mohammed agencies some 4 months back due to Pakistan military airstrikes. Dr. Mohammed Zia Haider is living in one of these tents. He said he heard 10 to 15 heavy blasts early in the morning. Like others interviewed by FSRN, Dr. Zia assumed the bombing was done by Indian's military and not the Pakistani government attacking its own people. For FSRN, Afridi Afridi in Jamrud, Khyber Agency, Pakistan.
This New Year's Day, join FSRN as we explore innovative solutions to local and global issues. We may be in a deep recession, but in times of crisis, one of the most valuable assets a nation has is the creativity, generosity, and compassion of its people.
Each one of us has the ability to make a positive difference in our community. And it's not only the choices that we make, how we live with each other, it's also how we utilize the resources in our community.
It is taking resources we don't know we have and discovering them and directing them in bending them in the direction of our values.
On this New Year's Day, join FSRN's Sherry Blackfeather Combe as she introduces you to people who are redefining the meaning of assets, investment, and profit. Local solutions to global problems. That's January 1st on FSRN. We're closing out 2008, and the new year brings, as always, top 10 lists of the best and worst and what's in and what's out. Our look back at the year comes from Project Censored, a media research program that bridges advocacy and academia to shine a light on the 25 most underreported, ignored, misrepresented, or censored stories from the year. FSRN's Tanya Snyder has more.
Project Censored spotlights the news that didn't make the news. The number one story on the list for the year is about the death toll in Iraq due to the U.S. occupation. They report that the media blackout on Iraqi casualties covers up the fact that more than 1 million people have been killed in that country, a number that surpasses the death toll from the Rwandan genocide. The list goes on.
One was the story I did for the magazine called The FBI Deputizes Business, which was an expose on a group called InfraGuard, which I really hadn't heard much about.
Matthew Rothschild is the editor of the Progressive magazine. He wrote the number 3 and number 5 most censored stories of the year. He says it took a lot of investigative reporting to write about InfraGuard, which is a group of 28,000 private business people who work with the FBI. Rothschild says they get classified information before many government officials do.
There is a discussion going on with these business people, a discussion led by the FBI and members of Homeland Security, at least in some cases, what the business people's responsibilities would be in a situation of martial law, and whether these business people would have the right to shoot to kill to protect their little corner of the infrastructure. And at least in one instance or two, they were told that they would indeed have that right.
Rothschild's other top 25 story covered the seizure of protesters' assets in Lebanon by the U.S. Treasury. Project Censored also highlighted several stories from El Salvador. CISPAS, the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, published stories on U.S. police training in Latin America and the battle over water privatization. CISPAS Director Burke Stansbury says these underreported stories need to get out.
There's an idea out there that the U.S. kind of forgot all about Central America, or that these wars ended and that was the end of the U.S. involvement, but that's not at all the case. And the U.S. continues to be very intimately involved in Central America, and it's important to recognize the fact that people in those countries are not at all in agreement with how the U.S. continues to impose itself in that region.
Peter Phillips runs Project Censored. He's a professor of sociology at Sonoma State University. Students research and compile the stories as part of their training on media and censorship.
It gets easier every year to find significant news stories that the corporate media hasn't covered.
Phillips says the media isn't keeping the public informed about the things they need to know in order to have a functional democracy.
Corporate media, as it's consolidated, now down to 10 major media corporations, is in the entertainment business. It's kind of a dumbing down process.
After Sonoma State students choose the top 25 censored stories for the year, they send it to a panel of judges for ranking. The judges over the years have included Noam Chomsky, Howard Zinn, and other heroes and heroines of progressive journalism. Frances Moore LaPay is one of them.
It used to be actually a Thanksgiving tradition at my house, believe it or not. I'd get this packet of stories right before Thanksgiving, and so it became kind of a part of our holiday tradition to read the stories. Our job as judges was this impossible task to try to figure out which ones were the most important and the least reported.
She says she started focusing on corporate media censorship when she was investigating why there was hunger in the world, and she realized that the problem wasn't a scarcity of food, but a scarcity of democracy.
You know, democracy is about the conversation of citizens. That's what it is. And if we're not conversing because we don't have core information that we need to connect our values and our interests with the largest public issues of the day, then to that degree, democracy is unreal. It's diminished. It's can't succeed.
Project Censor defines a censored news story as one which contains information that the general United States population has a right and a need to know, but to which it has limited access. Anyone can recommend a story for next year's list at projectcensored.org. For FSRN, I'm Tanya Snyder in Washington.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. Our newscast is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. We podcast at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. You can email us feedback, question, and story ideas to comments at fsrn.org. Today's newscast was produced by Catherine Comp and Vinod K. Joes. Headlines editor Nels Abram and the technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley. Join us tomorrow for a special documentary exploring the controversial U.S.-Mexico border wall. That's Wednesday, New Year's Eve on FSRN. For Ada Bogado, I'm Karen Miller in Washington, D.C.